You're listening to the Crowdfunding Nerds Podcast, a podcast that will help you succeed before, during, and after your crowdfunding event. And now, here is your host, Andrew Lowen.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Crowdfunding Nerds. I am your host, Andrew Lowen, and I am here, as always, with my co-hosts, Rick and Sean, who is sexy and Irish.
Hello!
Wait, am I the sexy or the Irish one?
I don't know what your genealogy report says.
Sorry.
I would say you're like 48% sexy, so that counts.
Wow, I'm getting there. That's pretty high in the nerd level.
All right. Well, we have a really good episode for you guys today. We're going to talk about a couple of topics near and dear to my heart because they happen all the time. Number one is delaying the launch of your Kickstarter. And really, number two is the bulk of what we'll be discussing are the scenarios that you need to plan for before you actually hit the launch button. So if you fail to fund, if you barely fund, if you have catastrophic success, you need to have plans for each of these things and or each of these possible scenarios. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. But first of all, before we get into that, what's up, nerds?
One interesting thing is you call me sexy Irish Sean, but I think it was actually one of our clients that sort of helped us coin that term, wasn't it? Because we were having a meeting with John Longren and his team behind Fallen Lands, and that's how that name came about.
So Fallen Land had this really interesting situation back in around mid-November. They had full plans to go to Kickstarter. This was, in fact, early November, before the presidential election. They were going to go to Kickstarter, and because of the insanity that it was happening with the whole coronavirus thing and undoubtedly all of the chaos happening in Kickstarter headquarters as a result of the season and the reduced workload or workforce and whatnot, they didn't get approved. So they had previously funded a successful Kickstarter for Fallen Land first edition, and it took them like over 2 weeks to actually get approved. So they missed their, that's approved for launch on Kickstarter. So they missed their launch date and they had to reschedule. And rather than elect to launch during the December holiday shopping season, we recommended that they would launch early 2021. So that's something that we could really get into, is just the delaying of launch. And they were kind of forced to delay, but we also had another campaign that wasn't forced, but we recommended it because they didn't have the audience yet. They really just needed the time to build an audience so that they could have a successful Kickstarter. And that was the Freelancers RPG called Skies Over Talyndia. Well, both of these projects really had kind of the same situation. They needed to delay their launch for one reason or another. And what we specialize in is making lemonade with lemons, right? So how do you turn a delayed launch into a good thing? Why is it a good idea to delay your launch? In what scenarios is it a good idea to delay your launch?
Yeah, so Fallen at the moment is actually live on Kickstarter, so we've got a link in the show notes for you to check out. Looks like a really, really cool game project to get behind. If you're in any way inclined to RPGs, this would be right up your alley. It's sort of set in a post-apocalyptic world. And we know the developers, the guys behind it, have put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into the project, and it's definitely one that you'd want to check out.
It reminds me of TI4, Twilight Imperium. It's had like 13 years in development and they launched it on Kickstarter 4 years ago to success. It has actually a really high score on Board Game Geeks, like 8.3 stars and super thematic. It really feels like, I like to call it Book of Eli, the game where you're in this post-apocalyptic world and you are kind of building a town and you're in almost like a Cold War with your neighbors that, you know, where the threat of violence is what keeps them from attacking you. It's kind of a little bit of an engine building game with events and other things like that. It's highly super thematic if you like post-apocalyptic stuff.
We'll also include a link to Freelancers RPG in the description or in the show notes so that you can check that out. They've got a really cool mechanic by where they sort of deviate a bit from the traditional rules of role-playing games where you select a class and that you're sort of, you know, locked into a particular role. You kind of transform into your class. So if you're more inclined to use a certain type of weapon, you'll develop skills in that. So it sort of has this fluid system of character creation, which is interesting.
It reminds me a little bit of Elder Scrolls, Morrowind, Oblivion, Skyrim. You play a character that is just a generic you know, person that, you know, you can kind of gravitate toward weaponry and heavy armor or, you know, whatever it is. And you end up with this character that's really interesting. You've got like a melee mage that uses heavy armor and also summons or something like that at the end of the game. And so the Freelancer RPG is very interesting, kind of like that. I love that freeform character creation. The fact is that both of these campaigns had to be delayed. What can you do when you have to delay a campaign that will benefit you when the campaign launches?
Another reason why delaying your deadline goal can be very beneficial is that a lot of times when you set this deadline goal, it's set well in advance and you have your roadmap to success to get to that deadline. And it always seems like at the last possible minute, all these things that you thought were right end up like not working out. You know, you have all these loose ends that come up. I think it's a great time to actually review your product, review what you're going to be releasing, and cover any loose ends or anything that you felt like you rushed on and you just, you know, you just finished it to get it done, where now you can go back and actually polish it and make sure everything is a workable experience.
Yeah, I think, you know, every product has an iteration cycle, which is the process of continually making something better. And if you've got a little bit more time to make something better, you have more time to enhance what is working with your product and maybe removing some things which are not. And, you know, because time is money, you really want to do this as quickly as possible. And as Richard said, it gives you some time to type some of those loose ends and maybe focus on things which you just simply didn't have the time to cover. And you want to be careful as well, because you don't want to spend lots and lots of time perfecting a product that nobody wants. So your corrections have to stop and you got to put it out there and see if you do people that you want this. And that's why Kickstarter is so important, because it really proves that there's a demand for this product.
Absolutely. And in fact, that kind of brings me into the an example, something that I dealt with this last week, where there was a company that went to Kickstarter, was having an issue they may not fund, you know, at the end of their Kickstarter campaign. It's a video game that actually had a venture capital investment. They'll have maybe $4 million of investment by the time that they actually release their first game. But they went to Kickstarter and they were looking for basically what amounts to like a gap of funding, because they had another round of investment that was going to come in maybe 2 months from now. So they needed $200,000 or so on Kickstarter. It looks like they're not going to get there, or they might not get there. And they looked at Kickstarter as a funding source, when in fact, it's really a proof of concept. It's proof in the marketplace that to an investor that the market wants what it is that you have. So if you prove your worth on Kickstarter, that thousands of people want your product, then these organizations that are in the business of making money will see you as a good bet. Now, if conversely, you fail to make that impression, then they look at it as, hey, maybe it's not such a good bet. Or maybe it just needs more time for the market to feel it out and, you know, become a proven success. I mean, there is a reason that we basically have very few original movies, and most of them are sequels or reboots of some kind, because that's what people know and what people are familiar with. And it's a lot easier to sell something people are familiar with. And if you botch the Kickstarter campaign, then it doesn't, you know, it's not like the final nail in your coffin. I mean, there are a lot of ways that people can overcome failure. And honestly, as a business owner, you should expect failures and that you will have to overcome failures. But it's one of those things that it would cause me, let's say if I were an investor of some kind, I would say, well, you didn't successfully fund a Kickstarter campaign, so maybe therefore people don't want your product. You know, or maybe you barely funded. An investor might say, well, you found your entire market on Kickstarter. The people that wanted your game found it and bought it. That's an objection that you have to overcome in order to get through to these investors, distribution or retailers or even backers on Kickstarter. They're all investors of some kind.
Some investors, they might not even be concerned on a return, because you brought up films. Some investors just want you to have a certain element in your game that is true to what they believe or what they're trying to promote. So for example, in the film industry, let's say you wanted to make a film you can, if you lived in Ireland, you could go to the Irish Film Board, which is a government agency, which you can then, you know, pitch your film idea and you can get funding to make your film. But they will want certain conditions. They will want that your film has, you know, a certain amount of Irish crew or Irish cast that's filmed in Ireland, and there's these conditions. So they might not really care if it's a, you know, a hit or get lots of sales, if there's even a market for it. They just want something that's Irish. And so I think that's maybe one of the dangers with, you know, private investors, that they could invest in your product, but really they don't really care if there's a demand for it, which is going to harm maybe your sales or other investors. So it's something to think about as
Absolutely.
Well. Ideally, whoever gives you money tells you what to do with your product. And this is why George Lucas bought the rights to Star Wars after the success of the first game, of his first film. He was able to buy the rights for Emperor Strikes Back and The Last Jedi because he kept the merchandise rights to his films. And then from that, he was able to sell it to Disney. And he was able to do that because he owned Star Wars. It was his. So, you know, that's how he became a billionaire.
Yeah. And then they screwed
it. Yeah, they ruined it.
That's a deep rabbit hole. But you know what? I'll say one thing about Star Wars is that I'm honestly just thankful for more Star Wars. But I'm going to complain about it because I'm a fan. So that's what we have to do. So the investors that you get, it's very important for investors to be like-minded. You as the creator, you have a vision for your product. And a lot of the time we go to Kickstarter with an idea, with a board game, with a video game, with whatever project it is. You're looking for others that are like you or that are interested in your product, that want to see it come to life. So what you do is you cast the vision for your product, you share the story of your product, and you hope to get investors buying, you know, one game at a time or whatever it is, right? And, you know, if you were to go and get a large corporate investor, or as, you know, last week, maybe a large state-run organization as an investor, then absolutely they're going to have certain requirements. Even if you were to go, let's say as a designer, you have a game and you want to give it to a publisher. That publisher, if that publisher is like-minded, they might not change your game at all, right? Your vision, as long as your team of investors and your team of, you know, those who are working on the actual product are like-minded, that's really what would allow your vision to come to reality. So I can't overstress the importance of having a like-minded group of investors. And that's exactly what Kickstarter backers are. They're just investors that might have $100 of discretionary spending each month that they would put toward Kickstarter campaigns. They are investors and they invest in products that seem to be custom made for them and their interest. As long as your project is exposed to them and it looks interesting, they'll jump on board and say, I believe in your vision and I want to support you. So it's kind of a fun way of investing. Before Kickstarter, it was really all about equity crowdfunding. You would sell a piece of equity for, you know, to so many people, and they would pay you a certain value, and that's how you would raise money. You could give big chunks to single investors, or you could give tiny, tiny chunks to many, many investors, and that exists as well. Bringing it back to this little topic at hand, delaying your launch. It's a great time to figure out what your people care about. You know, if you're required to delay your launch, you're able to communicate with your potential backers, with the people on your email list, and figure out what it is that they care about. Because your Kickstarter story, you may want to adjust it. So you may want to adjust your Kickstarter story so that those people feel heard and that the things they care about are highlighted and featured. One other obvious benefit to delaying your launch is that you have the opportunity to increase the size of your mailing list. And I would say that that's actually the lion's share of the benefit to delaying a launch. You can invest money into Facebook ads, or you can invest time into contributing to Facebook groups or Reddit or whatever it is, and you can pull in more people that want information.
So I know we've talked about having investors fund in your product. In fact, a question we've gotten a few times is, if I'm not making enough on Kickstarter, should I have my investors fill in the gap to make goal? Today we're actually going to talk about 4.5 scenarios. I'm using 0.5 because one's like a half a scenario. 4.5 scenarios that usually happen when you do your Kickstarter campaign and what options you have or choices you have when you're in these categories. And these categories include pretty much you're failing to fund. You're not going to fund. You started. It's not been going to where you want it. You're not going to make goal. Another scenario would be you barely funded. You actually made your goal just by a smidgen, and what where to go from there. And then you have categories where our clients have actually been doing pretty good, is where you actually fund decently well and where to go once you've funded decently well. And then Andrew has coined this next one as catastrophic success. You know, when I think of the word catastrophic, I'm thinking of something like, you know, bad, like catastrophic failure. But this is
often it is bad
success.
Because people aren't prepared.
It does throw me off, but it's success that is just so humongous. And that has happened a few times through these Kickstarter campaigns. And the last one, the half scenario that I added, the 0.5 and the 4.5 would be the where you're close to funding, but you might not make it.
Yeah, we could talk about this in kind of a reverse, with catastrophic success being the first one. Feels like the one that we should probably spend the least amount of time on, because it's the one that you can't exactly prepare for. There are some companies who have worked very diligently to earn a name in the industry and a very large following that can predict that they should earn over $1 million on every single project. You are probably not those people. So we'll spend a little bit of time on this weird scenario of catastrophic success. So if a product makes $100,000 versus $1 million, the $1 million product is more likely to fail to deliver to the end backers. We can talk about why that is, but let's talk about what catastrophic success is. So you had a goal for $50,000, you know, or let's just say $5,000, and you ended up raising an amount of money that is 1,000 order of magnitudes higher than you could have ever imagined. One example, this is kind of a funny one, is the Day of the Dragon on Kickstarter. So there was this guy that had a video game he wanted to make called the Day of the Dragon, and it's, you can go check it out on Kickstarter. It ended up, you know, after I want to say a few weeks, raised something like $40,000 to $50,000. And then all of a sudden, it went from like $50,000 to $500,000 by the end of the campaign. Like just a ton of money. And, you know, it's funny because you can see the stretch goals are like $10,000 increments. And then all of a sudden, it just exploded. And the reason for that was because I believe it was Universal Studios launched a Harry Potter event called the Day of the Dragon. And it had, you know, millions of people descend on Google searching for Day of the Dragon. And guess what the very top search result was? But this guy's Kickstarter campaign. The person made a ton of money and worked for the next few years and then failed to deliver. And oftentimes when somebody doesn't plan, they are going to fail due to bad management of the funds or bad management of their time because they don't have a plan. So I usually find that when somebody makes way more money than they expected, they spend their time or that money improperly, or maybe they fail to account for the big giant accounting bill that's coming if you fail to use accrual basis accounting. You know, it's quite possible that you get a huge tax bill that you weren't prepared for because you made all this money in 1 year and then your expenses weren't recorded until the following year. And if you live in the United States, the government doesn't much care that you are going to have to spend a lot of that money on the actual manufacturing of the product. If you made money in 1 year and your expenses aren't recorded until the next, the IRS is going to charge you, you know, taxes based on the money that you made. There is a method called accrual basis accounting that can sidestep that, but you have to know about it. You have to plan for it, right? But I mean, I've heard scenarios where people have lost their houses, and in one case, a guy decided to upgrade. So there was a comic book where they upgraded the size of the actual book from like an 8-inch by 10-inch to something like a 12-inch by 14. And they thought they could afford it, but it ended up that the shipping cost was prohibitive so that they couldn't actually deliver. And the long story short is that they got so mad they ended up recording a video of them burning all of their comics live for everyone to watch. The product that everyone ordered, they couldn't pay for it, and people were starting to troll them and get really mad, and so they burned their product. And that was the end of that campaign and probably that person's future on Kickstarter.
And that's interesting, because I think for some people, you know, catastrophic success actually means a mental breakdown. If you look at a Flappy Bird, for example, as a prime example, this little kid from the Philippines made this very basic mobile game and it blew up. He just got so sick and tired of all the criticism, like just couldn't handle it. He just, you know, took it off the store and it removed his product from the world, and he's probably living in a mansion somewhere. But, you know, just the idea of that, you know, catastrophic success wasn't able to handle all that pressure. And it resulted in the actual destruction of the product, which is kind of ironic.
Yeah, look at all those Flappy Bird clones out there now. There are two things I got out of what Andrew was saying. And let me see if I'm correct on this, Andrew. The first thing is, you know, Valentine's Day is just around the corner. So if I want to launch a very popular game, I should call it like Dozen Roses or Box of Chocolate, and it'll have a catastrophic success, right?
Guarantee it. But the other I can think of.
But the other thing, here's a question I have that I think a lot of listeners may have, and this is something that can be done on Kickstarter. Should you limit your pledges? Should you plan to make it so you cannot have a catastrophic success? Should you make it so, hey, I'm only going to allow so many backers of my base product and add-ons and whatnot? Is that something that a Kickstarter, you know, promoter should think of?
I would say no. And the reason for that is because you need to develop yourself such that you can handle such a thing, so that catastrophic success is, you know, to one person is funding well to another, right? If you're very well prepared, most businesses are going to fail because of bad management, not because they didn't have enough money. The manager managed poorly. And so if you invest in yourself, in studying, in training and going to Kickstarter, not going to Kickstarter too early, but maybe potentially even delaying your launch so that you can be ready for this, you stand a great chance of succeeding. I know a lot of publishers that we've personally worked with are, for example, White Wizard Games or other large publishers. We worked with Justin Gary of Stoneblade Entertainment on his Ascension Tactics. These people were very well prepared for the success that their campaigns receive. And there's nothing catastrophic about it. Yeah. So I guess we could probably, you know, end it there. But, you know, with the lesson of prepare yourself.
I think before we end it, I think we have to talk about the potato salad phenomenon. Yes. You know, of what's his name? Of Zach Brown. I think that is a prime example on Kickstarter of catastrophic success. Something that started off as a joke, blew up, and he actually funded 554,000% above his initial starting goal, which I think was...
Wasn't it like $50 or something?
Something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, it was a huge joke. I'll tell you what this campaign did right, though, in a funny way. They did not overpromise, right? So one thing that campaigns that experience this catastrophic success do is they didn't plan out their stretch goals. And so they just start promising things like, oh, we're going to do the miniatures now instead of tokens, and we're going to do plastic or acrylic, you know, resources and that sort of thing. And, you know, I mean, if you make $1 million, then, you know, you can do those things, right? But if you didn't figure it out with the manufacturer, you really don't know if you can do those things or not. It's interesting because this guy, he didn't overpromise, right? It wasn't like, I'm going to fly to every country in the world to find the best potato salad or whatever off of the money that I get here. It was, you know, I mean, although he would have probably still delivered his eating of a potato salad.
But I think he gave it to charity in the end, didn't he? Do you know the end of the story?
I actually haven't followed up on that.
Okay.
That'd be a good end of the story.
We never know. The mystery of the potato salad.
All right, but let's say we have a campaign here that wasn't catastrophically successful, because that's pretty rare. But we had one that we did it. What's our next step?
Yeah, these are the campaigns that have funded anywhere typically from like 300 to 600%. maybe they had a goal for $20,000 and they raised $100,000. You're probably not going to be able to quit your full-time job and, you know, jump in if this is your first project and whatnot. But the market clearly spoke and said, we like this. This is really interesting. We're talking about preparation for this scenario, right? And if this scenario actually happened to you, what I would expect is that you have a follow-up plan. So if you want to be a one-hit wonder, it's kind of a waste, right? If you make $100,000 off of your campaign that you wanted to raise at least 20 so you could see it enter the world, and you don't have any kind of follow-up plan, it's kind of a shame. So you should always have a follow-up plan, usually an expansion or a next game or something like that that you can work on. Ideally, you know, tell backers that they needed to wait 18 months to 2 years to receive that project that funded decently well. So you wouldn't have just made up a bunch of stretch goals that you now have to go get the art for and play test and whatnot. But you need to show leadership to your fans, because if you really, the idea behind a project that funds decently well is momentum. So the whole idea behind getting 1,000 people on your email list is momentum. So you want to start the ball rolling. I remember how miserable it was for me to start the ball rolling with Deliverance. I had nothing, and adding one person to my email list was a huge deal. One person a month was like, oh wow, we added a person. And that momentum is so important when you generate, you know, whatever, your 1,000 fans that you're going to go to Kickstarter with, and you fund your Kickstarter campaign very well. The ball is now rolling for you, and it's so important that you follow it up, that you show leadership by showing that you were prepared for that moment.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of your success, as you said, is knowing what the next step is and understanding that theoretically no product lasts forever. Eventually, no matter how successful your product is, it will decline in popularity and probably eventually die. So if you've designed your game with expansions in mind, or with other products similar to it in mind, you can be thinking of that in the background. Okay, where do we go from here? Because every product has a life cycle, and there's four stages to that. And there's an introduction, and this is where you're, you know, you have low sales, you have high promotional costs, you're getting it out there into the world. And then once it's out there, you have growth and you're seeing sales increase, and, you know, you can sort of optimize some of the manufacturing things and streamline some processes. This comes through with maturity, and you can start predicting certain outcomes, but eventually it will decline. And this is where your sales decline, the interest in the product will decline. And that's why you often see so many YouTube channels that just die eventually, because they fail to reinvent themselves. Their formula is not as effective as it originally was, it has diminishing returns. And some people are very good at sort of, you know, reinventing themselves and getting back up on there and creating a new product essentially. But some don't, they fail. So there's many YouTube channels that were very popular in the past, which are gone and forgotten now. So that's just an example of having that awareness that every product, no matter how good it is, will eventually die.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, you have to plan where you want to go as a company. As a marketer, I like to know that you've thought of that, because, you know, I mean, I want you to come back and use our services for your next game, right?
All right. So we got our projects that went through and funded decently well or catastrophically well. But what about the ones that just like barely make it? You know, I got my $10,000 goal and we made $10,001. We're like, woohoo, we did it.
You know, so you as the publisher have to consider these things. So you, again, I say as a publisher, are in the business of making money. Now, you don't have to make enough money to, you know, have a mansion like Bill Gates or whatever it is, but you have to make enough money to make another game or to support your existing product. I mean, money is a necessary thing in order to operate. And of course, if your business is only about making money, then it's a poor business indeed. So first thing I think is, number one, is this something that the market wants? Or did I maybe not expose it properly? Or maybe was this the wrong medium to try to amplify the marketing message? So there are some games that are, you know, I mean, Cards Against Humanity is one of them. Party games don't do very well on Kickstarter. So by and large, Party games don't do well on Kickstarter. Cards Against Humanity made something like $12,000 or $14,000. Maybe it would have made a lot more later, but it, you know, has made a lot more than that, being located at every big box and small box retailer known to mankind across the world for the last however many years. It's made a lot more than that. You do have certain games like Unstable Unicorns or Exploding Kittens that do really well, but they oftentimes had some sort of another gimmick. Maybe they've established their market. Exploding Kittens was a popular, or spawned from a popular webcomic called The Oatmeal, right? And so they had their audience and whatnot. But does the market want this? Is that, that's a real question that you will have to come to terms with. It is possible that they didn't, that the market didn't really want it, that it wasn't very exciting for whatever reason. And that's something that you need to be able to go to the drawing board and say, well, what, why was that? You know, should you do something different with the product, or should you stop that product line and, you know, go somewhere else, try to sell through that stock and kind of pick up the pieces and move on?
Yeah, Betty funding is a tricky one. It's when you're in this sort of gray area, it's hard to know what's the next step, because it's whatever you do is going to incur risk. As you said, you continue with the project and there's a possibility it could grow in popularity. That's great. Or do you cut your losses and say, okay, well, this isn't funding as I expected, and so we're going to, you know, shelve the project. One thing you could probably do is maybe examine what might be the weakest link in your product. How could that be improved?
You don't really want to get into this barely funded state. You want to overfund, right? I mean, the whole reason we go to Kickstarter and we have a funding goal is so we can make 10 times that funding goal or whatever it is, right? All right. But if we barely fund, it is true that we do see our project come to life. You know, if it's managed properly, if it was planned properly and all that. Before the Kickstarter actually goes live, a lot of what you can do beforehand is specifically meant to ensure that you don't just limp across the finish line. I mean, it's a recurring theme, is that people go to Kickstarter with a very small marketing, influence. I mean, your launch date is so critical that you fund a decent, I mean, I try to have a project fund 100% on launch day. That's always my goal every single time. But if it doesn't, then Kickstarter's metrics say that you need to fund at least a third of the way on your launch day if you want to have a chance of funding. I find it's between 30 to 50%, actually. You know, and that's if you hustle after that launch day and you are constantly posting and trying to encourage people back to you to share and all of that, you can fund. But you want to be in a position of strength. It's a scenario that is largely able to be avoided if you have a significant email list, or, you know, if you have a following.
Another thing you could do is you could actually make barely funding impossible. So where you actually artificially increase your fund goal so that your actual fund goal goes above and beyond your just basic manufacturing cost to basically get the game printed. Your fund goal actually is your funding pretty decently point or threshold. So therefore, you know the people that you want this product. So that's one way where you could sort of remove some of that ambiguity, is to really increase the threshold of that fund goal.
You know, your goal on Kickstarter is to obliterate your goal. I mean, success begets success. I mean, pretty much people, when they're looking for games, are like, oh, wow, he's 296% overfunded. Maybe I should look into it. This might be something that's
a winner, you
know, something I might be interested in. And, you know, the reason why is because they're looking at it as already successful, and they're looking at it as something that will get done, which I know we've talked about this in the past. Sometimes, even though they are successful, they may not finish their product. But you know what? If you barely make your goal, kudos to you. You did it. And if you've budgeted it out correctly, there shouldn't be any problems. It should be a success. It shouldn't be a woe is me, I barely did it. I feel that if you budgeted and you got the numbers all lined up and you have everything all lined up, your ducks in a row, if you make that goal, no matter how barely you make it, you're a winner.
And that is true. I think that, you know, it's really easy to understate a project that barely funds, and that's not my intent. I actually am proud of those people, because they most oftentimes, it's going to be their first campaign, maybe the second campaign, you know, and they are planting seeds for a business. I mean, they started a business and are hustling at it. I think that is to be commended. Now, there are a lot of ways that you can kind of come back. You know, you mentioned, Rick, great planning, organization. to make sure that you got your numbers right, that you're not going to be losing out on money and that kind of thing. You know, to your point, Sean, earlier you mentioned to increase the funding threshold so that you can absolutely produce without getting into that kind of maybe where you lose money. There are some companies that will create, you know, they'll have a $15,000 manufacturing bill to create the minimum print run of units, and their funding goal is $5,000. We work with companies that do that, and that's a risk, just as it is to, you know, say, well, I want to make sure we don't go negative in the account. So my $15,000 print run, I'm going to say it's 25 for our funding goal. You know, you add up all the factors, the freight and the manufacturing and whatever, and you decide that your buffer is such that, all right, we're going to do 25,000. Both carry risks. Now, there are ways that you can kind of mitigate this. And the chief one is a pledge manager. When you guys, you know, GameFound is a great pledge manager that's currently free. They're a competitor to Kickstarter, or they will shortly be. BackerKit, Pledge Manager, Jetbacker is a good one. These are a couple of options that you have to actually make sales before you deliver your product, but after you successfully fund on Kickstarter. So what I find is with a pledge manager, number one, it helps you kind of separate out the shipping so that you're not charging shipping and the price of the product all at the same time. Makes it an easier pill to swallow, but you're able to maybe upsell the people that bought in already. You know, if it's a couple of months separated from the time their credit card got charged and, you know, the last time because your Kickstarter is successfully funded, and the where they fill out the pledge manager and pay for shipping, they might actually add other products to their cart. So usually companies that run a pledge manager end up making like 15 to 25% more actually of what they funded on Kickstarter. They make an extra 15 to 25%. They can say, hey, you know, the money that we raise on our pledge manager can actually, will actually apply towards stretch goals, and your backers will love that, right? So it's another way to kind of keep the momentum going and that sort of thing. Barely funded doesn't mean that your product is undesirable, but again, that's an objection that you have to overcome.
So here I am, got my Kickstarter campaign, and I'm a week in already, and I'm only at 20% of my goal. It doesn't look good. When should I decide to pull the plug on my campaign?
So my recommendation is not to wait until the end, the very last moment, in order to pull the plug. As soon as your backers understand that you're not going to fund, the momentum, the wind just leaves the sails, and the momentum dies, and stagnation actually is kind of poisonous in a Kickstarter environment. Your backers will start to abandon your campaign. You know, you might have, you know, 500 backers or 100 or, you know, 75, whatever it is. When you realize that you're not going to successfully fund, it's better to cancel your project when you have 100 backers than it is to wait until you have, you know, 30 minutes before the end of your campaign to cancel, because you've had a bunch of backers jump ship by that point. Using that line of reasoning, you want to cancel so that you get to send project updates, even on a failed campaign. And if you cancel at kind of the peak of your momentum, rather maybe when you're starting to go downhill, and you absolutely know without a shadow of a doubt you're not going to fund, it's good to cancel at that point, because then you're going to retain more people that will receive your updates. Positivity is infectious, and people tend to gravitate toward positivity. So remaining positive is like a light in the darkness. You know, people are going to be attracted to it, and your leadership to show, hey, looks like, you know, we didn't fund, I think we didn't, or, you know, we didn't fund for X, Y, and Z reasons, and we're going back to the drawing board, or maybe we've gone to the drawing board during, you know, during the course of the campaign, we've gone to the drawing board and determined this is why, or maybe you pull your backers to figure out, you know, what do you think the problem was, or whatever it is. And you come up with a plan, you make sure your backers stay informed, and you set up a plan for a relaunch.
Yeah, and I think as an entrepreneur, you really have to get comfortable with the idea of failure. You know, it was Thomas Edison who famously said, "I've not failed, I've just found 10,000 ways that didn't work." And as an entrepreneur, you really don't fail, you learn. You should learn from your failures and improve upon them. So you're either going to get buried by your failures or you're going to stand on top of them. So keeping that positive perspective and thinking, how can I learn from this failure? What didn't work? What can be improved? Is really what's going to make your next project or your next endeavor all the more better. And the reality is that any, you know, thriving project has a mountain of failure behind it that has been overcome and has been used to propel this particular success into what it is today. So you're going to fail as an entrepreneur. You're going to fail in a lot of things in life. And I think just as a person, you've got to get comfortable with failure and not let it destroy you.
Absolutely.
So one of the things I mentioned earlier, the half scenario that I they came up with, the 4.5 in our 4.5, or the 0.5 in our 4.5, was what if you're really close to funding, but you just might fail? I mean, what do you do? I mean, do you pull the plug, or do you say, hey, you know what, let me open up my wallet and I'll cover the rest just to make it successful? Do we look at paid ads? Do you look at influencers? What can you do to, or what should you do? Should you either cut it or go? And if you do go, how do you bump it up to make that goal?
One campaign, you know, was one of the earliest campaigns that I advised on. It looked like, you know, they were, I'd say, like 60% of the way funded. Half of their campaign was done. You know, maybe like 10 days left. The momentum had generally died, and they were gaining a backer one day, losing one backer the next day, and it just wasn't going anywhere. What they wanted to do is they wanted to put what amounted to a third of their funding goal, so almost the entire amount that they needed remaining, they wanted to put that into Facebook ads. And I recommended that they did not do that, but they did it anyway, and they ended up funding barely. So they paid, let's just call it $1,000 for about $1,000 worth of pledges. And that's kind of how it worked out. And they ended up funding. At the end of the day, if they chose not to run that campaign, they would have probably saved $3,000 to $4,000. You know, if they had elected to just, you know, pay for the print run themselves, they would have still saved like $2,000. To me, it was an unfortunate choice. I mean, it's just, I don't like trying to cover the gap of your funding by paying for more marketing. It basically boils down to one thing, is that when somebody goes to your campaign page and sees your campaign's not funded, they usually hit the back button and go look for another campaign that is. A campaign that's a winner, right? They don't want to back a campaign that's a loser, a campaign that they just saw for the very first time and have no attachment to it. There's no reason that they should consider one campaign over another, except for if one campaign's funded and another's not. Paid promotion, like paying money to Facebook or paying money to Board Game Geek or paying money to whatever, is a bad idea when you're in a situation like that. What can you do? I mean, there are a lot of things that you can do that all boil down to organic. There was one case actually that I was able to consult on, a project called Dungeons of Infinity by Jack Sporner. He had gone through a situation that he had already failed to fund once. He didn't really have marketing expertise, and he just was going for it. And a great product that he just was also a labor of love that he wanted to see come to fruition. And he was about 50% funded halfway through his campaign. I recommended that he would consider how to relaunch. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to see it through. I believe I can do it. And actually, his positivity was so infectious that I jumped on board. I actually personally ended up backing his game because it seemed like a fun game. I wanted to support him and all of that. And he showed great leadership. But also, he really tapped into a couple of very, very important veins. The first one is all the marketing that you can personally do pales in comparison to what your backers can do for you. If you simply encourage your people to tell other people, you're going to find that your campaign is going to do a whole lot better, because the people who are already emotionally attached, the backers, are going to tell other people, and they're going to maybe get some of those people emotionally attached as well, so that they want the campaign to succeed, because this backer does, that backer's friend now wants the campaign to succeed too, right? And they'll back. So that's a great way to spend your time, to try to make up that funding gap. Another option is, you know, I have 40% of my funding goal and I need 60% more in order to actually fund. Maybe I could have one investor put a big chunk of money in, because I don't want to lose that 40% of the of money, right? I think that's just a terrible idea. Terrible idea. Because it doesn't show that the market wants it. You're just trying to save face. You're going to spend a lot of someone's money, 10% of whatever they spend, right? It goes to Kickstarter or to Stripe. It's a really bad show, because backers can tell when somebody put in a huge chunk of money. It's just overall a bad idea.
So at the end of the day, what we're really saying is that you need to be preemptive in preparing responses to these 4.5 scenarios. Number one was catastrophic success. What are you going to do if you have a project that is just catastrophically successful? The next one is when you funded decently. The next one is you barely funded, you failed to fund, and then you might fund, you're very close to funding. You need to have answers to all of these situations and know what you're doing should you find yourself in one of these positions.
And we're also out of time for this week's episode of Crowdfunding Nerds Podcast. We would like to thank you all for listening to us today. And for more information about this podcast, as well as some really great articles we have, please visit our website, crowdfundingnerds.com. And if you have a question for us, drop us a line at crowdfundingnerds.com/questions. And just another reminder again, Valentine's Day is just around the corner, so make sure you get your Dozen Roses card game posted on Kickstarter, so when the millions of people who are searching for Dozen Roses on Valentine's Day on Google are looking for you, you'll pop up and you'll get all that catastrophic traffic, and you'll be catastrophically successful, and you'll have a great Kickstarter campaign. Thank you all. See you all. Adios, nerds. Sorry.